We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. This is, of course, the Gilcast. We are recording it on Monday morning this week, so we'll actually get a look at some of the salaries at the end. You also might be listening to this on the Roto Grinders Daily Fantasy Football feed. And if you were tuning in hoping that we did not play the most duplicated lineup in the history of DraftKings cash games, you're wrong. I think, guys, first time in the history of the show we all three played the same lineup. I mean maybe it's happened before, but I don't remember all three of us playing the same team before.
I'm pretty sure it's first.
I don't think it's happened. First off, let's talk about what led to this most dupe lineup, right? Because I felt like all week cash was really up in the air. We had so many injuries and so much stuff that was really uncertain. I thought it was actually kind of strange that everything fell onto
it fell in such a way. So what happened was Dearness Johnson and Mark Ingram became stone locks. Davante Adams became a stone lock on Friday once we realized that Aaron Rodgers was good to go, was cleared to play. Then Ben Roethlisberger, I don't remember if it was Saturday night or Friday night, he got placed on the COVID list. So then there was one clear cheap defense with the Detroit Lions. I mean, people liked the Titans, people liked the Eagles. Like, there was a little bit of variation there. But once it became clear that Mason Rudolph was going to start, then it became the Lions. Then we had, I actually think the Evans thing was kind of interesting, where had Bruce Arians on Tuesday said Godwin's going to play for sure, I actually think Evans would not have been quite so steamy, but people just got it in their heads that he was going to be the only guy. And then, you know, there was a little bit of conversation like, oh, Dan Arnold or Dallas Goedert or whatever, but basically all the pieces just fit. And if you did not play this team, the team was Dak Prescott, Dearness Johnson, Mark Ingram, Davante Adams, Keenan Allen, Mike Evans, Dan Arnold, James Conner, and the Lions defense. I've never seen this before, but in the massive $50 double up, all nine of those plays were the nine most owned plays. Someone tweeted at me that in the $5 single entry double up, which is the largest one that they do, 7% of the entries were this exact team. That's insane.
It's so insane. And, you know, if you're not part of the secret DFS chat where the entire community is in one Discord channel, printing out one lineup, you know, you missed out.
Yeah. So the weird thing,
Nate. I think the weird thing is there actually were a lot of like in-play running backs. It wasn't one of those
and wide receivers
where,
too.
Yeah, I think it was. It just happened to be the way that salary and construction worked that you just ended on this team. Like, it wasn't that James Conner was like that much of a better play than Najee Harris, or it wasn't that,
or Jonathan Taylor even,
or Jonathan Taylor. It wasn't that, you know, Cooper was that, it just, or like defense wasn't that much clearer than, it just ended up like, if you build through the right player, like this is the optimal way. And so, yeah, it was just a weird week because I can't remember this much overlap, but also this much playable plays that I wouldn't have like been mad at.
Yeah. Well, let's not bury the lead here. So this lineup, I think, was clearly correct. Mathematically, when you looked at projections,
so,
I think.
So I did want to touch on the projections for a second.
Yeah.
So this lineup was the blitz optimal.
Yep.
This lineup was the ETR optimal.
Yep.
And those are the only, you know, and then the daily road projections. However, our projections actually had CeeDee ahead of Keenan, which would have, you know, obviously that pretty big. So I mean,
mentally strong projections.
And I want to talk more about this for head to heads later, because I was kind of talking about it with Cardi earlier, but I generally will just run the aggregate projections. So I combine all three of those and then run them, and that moved Keenan like 0.2 ahead or whatever. But I said this on Sunday morning too. I don't think that I have ever had Cardi message me the same lineup as everyone else, because normally Cardi will have something in the blitz that is different than what everyone else is doing, because Cardi uses different inputs than everyone else. You know, he has, or not different inputs. He has more inputs than everyone else.
He has a couple guys in the dome that he's just like, yeah, we got to get him in the dome.
Right. But even he didn't play CeeDee.
Yeah.
Right. So I was just like, this just has to be the team. There's just no other team to play other than this.
CeeDee didn't rank super well in my stuff either. And I know my numbers are very different because I use I use a lot of different volume metrics than most. But I thought this was just so clearly the team. And it was, I can't remember being that confident. I mean, at 11 o'clock, I think it texted.
It was like an hour before. Yeah.
It was like, guys, I feel good. I'm just entering more contests. Like, I'm not even thinking about anything. It's just like, it was an easy week in cash games. And I think if you didn't play this team, you should like evaluate some things.
So obviously I think that you could have 1v1 Keenan versus CeeDee. I also think you could have 1v1 Godwin versus Keenan as well. I don't think that any of those teams were all within a point.
And yeah, so the issue with Godwin was the injury, and I don't want to like just say, oh yeah, it's, you know, new information, so, you know, we don't want to act on it, but, you know, there is evidence that players coming off injury that are questionable have X number of percent off there.
No, it's the opposite. Guys who are listed as questionable. Adam Harstead has done this study at Football Guys. Guys who are listed as questionable and who play do not have a meaningful change in their fantasy points per game.
Really?
Yes. It's like one thing differently. I mean, it's possible. I remember reading this study like 3 or 4 years ago. So it's possible that, because injury reporting is different now than it used to be. Guys are listed more often now, actually, because of the way the rules
are. There's no probable.
Yeah. So maybe that distinction would have changed things, where guys would have been listed as probable, and like Godwin's condition might have been listed as probable before the rules changed or whatever. So that's possible. I would not have played Godwin in cash, but so the thing I was arguing with Cardi about, not even arguing, just discussing, was, did either of you consider playing CeeDee over Keenan in your head-to-heads to improve the sweep equity? Because, you know, obviously it correlates with the quarterback everyone played. And you know CeeDee is going to be way lower owned in your head-to-heads than Keenan. And it's not that CeeDee was a bad play, and it just gives that sweep equity.
Well, the quick answer for me is yes, because
We'll get to what you.
Yeah, I went for a whole different thing in head to heads. But we played. We actually swapped to CeeDee in our pentathlon lineup. So for people that don't know, Derek Van Riper puts on this cool ass event called the pentathlon, where you, like, you know, have spread picks, and you have a best ball team, and you have Survivor, or we had Survivor before we stuck on Pittsburgh anyway, Davis. But we played.
We would have lost regardless of who we, all three teams we considered lost.
I know. Tough scene. Anyways, we played this lineup with CD in that contest. So yes, I think that was a reasonable thing to do, basically.
Yeah. What about you, Nate?
No, I didn't. I mean, the thing about Keenan is like his volume projection in this spot was really high. And I thought that CD's projection in general, like CD really took off with Gallup being out. Like there was just a lot more targets to go around. There were a lot more, there was a lot more opportunity for him. And with Gallup coming back, I actually thought that CD had a lot lower floor than coming in than was expected.
Well, and now we know that's not true because now Dalton Schultz just doesn't exist. I feel pretty confident Dalton Schultz is going to have like a 9.5% target share moving forward.
Yeah, but like CD has had two games of double-digit targets and right. Keenan, like you expect that. And so it's one right. of those things where in cash, like I did have way more CD in tournaments. I don't think I had one Keenan
tournament. I didn't have any Keenan tournaments.
You know, but in cash games, like I don't know. Keenan was just very clearly for me. I didn't even consider it. Obviously, CD smashed and it was great. But
yeah, I mean, it's a higher variance play for sure. Like you yeah. have to understand that you're giving up a floor edge. But you know, I mean, the thing that the projections will never account for is that Keenan Allen is allergic to touchdowns.
He's just the and, like with some wide receivers, they get to the 2 yard line and you're like, oh dude, my guy, they're going to give it to him. And the Chargers get to the 2 yard line and you're like, well, I guess it's Steven Anderson time. Like,
it's Larry Roundtree is about to just dunk in the pool right now. And you also, they also don't account for the fact that Keenan Allen is a stone lock to come up between 1 and 4 yards short of the bonus in every game.
Every week. Yeah. He actually, Keenan actually had the bonus. Like he was awarded a reception incorrectly. And so he had like 107 receiving yards and they took it away. Like it was like a misattributed catch, but he had the bonus on DraftKings for like 5 minutes or something.
It actually happened to CD too, I believe. I think CD
It happened to both of them.
Yeah, and they called it a rush.
D'Ernest Johnson did the Devontae Booker 103 rushing yards, then got a -4 rush and lost the bonus as well.
Yeah, we're petitioning DraftKings. We have crafted a finely worded letter.
Once you get the bonus, you keep the bonus. You do not lose the bonus. Bonus. So
we're waiting word from DK support. See what happens.
Yeah. It's just, yeah. Overall though, the Dallas offense, you just rely so much more on efficiency and less on volume because there's games where Dak doesn't need to throw more than 20 something times.
We almost kind of got fucked on Dak with that. They had 38 points in the first half. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Dallas played really sharp though. I actually really do appreciate it. I think it was like end of the second quarter. They like, were calling timeouts, forcing a punt, went for
get
two,
the ball back. Third. Yeah.
And it's like, I actually, that I hate when teams just get up and then like kind of let the foot off the gas. So Dallas actually played really sharp.
That's so funny. I had to do some yard work yesterday. So during the second quarter, I was mowing the lawn and I was listening to the Cowboys game on the radio.
Oh my God. You are such a suburban dickhead.
No, but
seriously,
that's not even,
who are you on a Sunday afternoon? You're freaking
this
doing
is not
yard
even,
work.
This is not even the good part of the story. So I'm listening to the Cowboys guys on the radio and they are like, absolutely hating the Cowboys scoring points. They're like, I cannot believe they kept making jokes about the because you know the Cowboys had that replacement kicker and they're like, we're not even gonna know if he can make any field goals because every time it gets to fourth and short, McCarthy just goes for it. Like they're like pissed off about how many points their team is scoring. Like it was just so bizarre.
That's a good way to know that you're playing optimally when all the old hag announcers are all ripping on your style. But yeah, I mean, Dallas just played super efficiently. We got really lucky with Dak though. I mean,
can you just picture Davis? He's outside in his basketball shorts. He's like got his long flowing blonde hair and he's, you know, got the tattoos everywhere and he's got this lawnmower and he's just like listening with his AirPods to this game and snickering because
I'm literally I'm like laughing out loud about it was, I don't, they had like a fourth and one on like the 33 or something. And they were just like, I cannot believe they're not kicking the field goal here. And I'm just like, what universe do these guys live in? Like, it's just, it was really bizarre.
Yeah,
I don't have anything else.
It was nice for Dak to beast mode on that rushing touchdown there at the end. Like that was a solid, yeah.
I was hoping that when it got to garbage time that they'd leave Gallup in there with Cooper Rush to try, you know, cause he's coming back from injury to like work on his conditioning a little bit, but they didn't.
The double stacks would have appreciated that.
Yeah. Well, Let's talk about this dipshit team. One other thing.
Did any of you guys consider DeAndre Swift in cash? Cause I had a build earlier in the week that had Swift.
There were just too many plays.
I was worried about the matchup.
Oh God, Sammy. God, what? Listen to yourself. DeAndre Swift is like,
he got what, I mean, 33 carries in the end or something?
33 carries, six targets. He had like 93% of the snaps with.
And Godwin, Isabuque, and Jamar Jefferson scored 70 yards combined worth of rushing touchdowns.
But I mean, literally, this Swift thing with no Jamal, this usage is insane. I mean, literally a 25% target share with an 85% rushing attempt share. I mean, this is. I don't know. It's unheard of.
It was an oversight.
All right, Sammy, talk about this dipshit head-to-head team you played and why you did this. I mean, I don't even know where to begin with this. This is one of the worst things I've ever seen.
Well, boys, obviously we're talking about the lineup that was just so obvious, and you know, I played this lineup a lot, but in a lot of my head-to-heads, I decided to go for the sweep, and I decided to go off the wall. And this is decidedly minus EV, and I knew it was. But at the same time, I kind of felt a little bit of hubris. I felt a little bit of what Levitan would call IKB, I know better. And I actually didn't feel as confident in this chalk lineup as a lot of people did. I did not feel great about Mark Ingram. I didn't like Mark Ingram. I thought that the Saints with Trevor Siemian and no Mike Thomas and no Alvin Kamara on the road in Tennessee, who has been destroying people, that they had a super low floor. And I was like, yeah, I know Ingram.
Did you just not think he was going to catch passes or what?
I just thought he was going to dust. Like, he's dust.
I mean, dude, he played 85% of the snaps and got 7 targets.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The guy to feel sketchy about was Connor, in my opinion, because you know, he hadn't had a 100-yard rushing game yet. Like, Eno could have played passing downs. Rondale Moore could have been, you know, the nominal third down back. I thought there was like far more reason to feel sketchy about Connor.
I just hated the Saints. I just thought that the scoring environment was bad and Mark Ingram is bad. And you know, took my L there because Mark Ingram, when they were down 20 points or whatever, put one in the zone right in my face. I also didn't love Keenan Allen for the aforementioned reasons. I know he's got a high floor.
No, he's a cuck lord. I'm not even gonna criticize you about that. So this is the dumbass head to head.
Talk about the team. Put the team out there.
So he played Mason Rudolph, Jonathan Taylor, Dearness Johnson, Devontae Adams, Jerry Jeudy, AJ Brown, Dan Arnold, James Conner, and the Lions defense. The problem here is you missed the obvious 2v2 if you really wanted to play Jonathan Taylor, which was Jonathan Taylor and Cole Beasley over Keenan Allen and James Conner.
Sammy, I literally, so 12:05, I open up a couple quick contests. I open up like the $25 cash just to look at exposures. I look at a couple of my high dollar single entry. And then I open up the Gilcast, like our three man. I thought you had like an upload mistake. I was like, oh crap, Sammy uploaded with last week's DK IDs. Like Mason Rudolph, AJ Brown. I'm like, what is this team?
It's literally indefensible. Sammy. It's indefensible.
You know, I really wanted Jonathan Taylor, you guys.
But why didn't you just play him over Keenan and play a cheaper? I mean, even Jeudy, who you have in this dumb lineup, would have fit in that 2v2.
I just wanted Jonathan Taylor, you guys, and Mason Rudolph. I was like, you know, so Mason Rudolph was like the second highest point per dollar QB according to the projections I was looking at, and I was like, you know what? the line really didn't change because Roethlisberger was out. You know, like not much change. If Roethlisberger was 4.1K, he would be the chalk. He would. And I was just like, you know what? Like, I'm going to do it and I'm going to smash in AJ. Like, this lineup actually would have worked if AJ Brown had a pretty good game. It really would have.
Or if you had played Mark Ingram over James Conner.
Yeah, no, for sure. It was
At least you didn't pay up for the Cards defense, which is what some people did. And I'm not even saying it was wrong.
It was definitely a shit lineup. It was definitely me saying, you know what? Like, I know what the chalk is, and I'm going to do something decidedly minus EV to try to sweep head to heads. And I deserve to get roasted, man. But you can send invites to me, Whirling Dervish. I may go Galbrain.
And there's a good chance he might do something this
year. Yeah, just keep sending them, boys. Just keep sending them. Every once in a while, it's Christmas. I decide to give out some
invites have really slowed down. We got to have a big losing week to get the invites coming in.
Yeah, we've been winning way too much, man. This is very bad for the show.
I had zero invites, and it's just been brutal.
Yeah, and nobody can find you. People can find the Whirling Dervish, but they can't find Nathan.
I don't understand why people can't find it.
Yeah. All right. I mean, I just don't have anything else interesting to say about these cash games. Like, it was not an interesting week.
Do you want to talk about some of the other players? Like, obviously we talked about Swift. Do you want to talk about Stevenson? Stevenson's workload was nuts.
That's actually a good seg. Like, Stevenson, I thought, was the nut pivot off of Ingram or Dearness Johnson. I thought that up until about 11:55 Central time. So I got to come clean. I played a lineup in the double spy, a DAC double stack. And I, at 11:55 Central time, swapped out Ramondre for Brandon Bolden based off of New England beat writers reporting that he was the starting running back in pre-snap warmups.
That's why you swapped?
Well, it was a compounding of things. So at the same time, you know, Ramondre had not practiced all week. He had not been at practice all week because of the he was recovering from, you know, a concussion. And what ended up happening is actually what I thought in my mind, which is worst case scenario, Bolden is going to have a crack at a touchdown, which he did. He got tackled on the one, and he's going to be the third down back, which he was. I'm not defending the play, but it did kind of play out how I imagined. Ramondre was just, I mean, obviously way more successful, 20 rushes, 100 yards, 2 rushing touchdowns. I think he had 3 receptions as well.
Brandon Bolden is a special teamer.
As I told you literally 2 weeks ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we played Mike White this week, buddy, but you know, Mike White is Mike White. So.
Yeah, the Stevenson workload was nuts. It was an interesting week because there were so many running backs that were thrust into roles. So every week I pull up like an expected point metric, you know, for running backs. And most of the time that correlates very highly with cash game ownership.
Right.
But this week, if you look at the most,
too many plays.
It was Dalvin Cook, Ramondre Stevenson, DeAndre Swift, Darrell Williams, Antonio Gibson, Christian McCaffrey, Jonathan Taylor. Like, you didn't get to a cash game running back until Mark Ingram, who was like eighth or ninth on the list. And it was like, there were so many running backs that got just crazy volume. And I don't know. I mean, CMC was back too, which was a tournament discussion, but I don't know. Jonathan Taylor, Sammy, I can't believe what you did.
Jonathan Taylor was the fucking nuts. He had 100 and a touchdown in the first half. Like, I don't even know how he didn't get there. I mean, he did get there. He ended up with like 27 or 28, but like, dude, he was headed for an all-timer, and they just like stopped doing things and almost lost to Jacksonville. Like, JT was a smash. I had him.
He had 20 in the first half and ended with like 27.
Yeah. I mean, I love JT. I had 100% JT in tournaments. I'm just not going to go off the freaking clear construction to get him in cash.
All right. So let's do the GPP teams now. Every team I made this week was a DAC double stack. I thought it was so clearly the play The ownership did not get out of control, right? I mean, Dak was high owned, but none of Amari, Gallup, or CD, or Schultz, none of those guys got out of control at all. So this team I played in the double spy was Dak, D'Ernest Johnson, Brandon Bolden, and Jonathan Taylor at running back. I thought that D'Ernest was the better tournament play than Mark Ingram. I knew they'd both have insane ownership, but I felt like you probably needed to play one of them just because they were such free points. I love the Ramondre pivot. You know, I played Brandon Bolden. I'm a fucking nitwit. Then I played Chris Godwin at 9%. When the cards flipped over, I was like really stoked about that. Amari Cooper was 11%. I thought he would be way chalkier. The thing that surprised me was Gallup got a lot of like late steam. He was 10%. I thought he would be much more like 5%. Kyle Pitts as the bring back, 14%. Jonathan Taylor at 19%. And then the Eagles defense at 5%. So I felt good about this team. Had Atlanta been competitive at all, had Ramondre gotten in there instead of Bolden, I would have felt pretty fucking good. But we live to fight another day. I'm in cash here. But yeah, I mean, Dak doubles. Did we all play Dak doubles as our main team? I assume so.
Yes, we did. What would you have finished? Do you know? I'm sure you've calculated if you had had Ramondre in.
I mean, it was a 27 point swing. So that would have been, you know, around 10th or so in this. But then, yeah, I mean, had Godwin done anything also? Like looking at a lineup that had Bink potential, which, I mean, you always feel good about having something that has. Like just even turning, like sometimes the lineups lock and you look at it and you're like, the way this is structured, I actually fucked up and I can't, there's no possible way I can win here. So at least turning it over and having something that can feels nice.
Yeah. At least you turned over Brandon Bolden and nobody owned him. And you're like, oh, I'm live.
Hey, 10 points from a 1% owned guy in a week where every running back doesn't score 30 points. Sometimes that could be usable. It just was not usable this week. even when I play good, I play bad. Is somehow how it works.
Yep. Yep. Nate, yeah. You played a double too?
I didn't actually. Not a Dak double as my main team. I did have some Dak doubles in like spread throughout, but my main team actually was a Josh Allen double. I thought Josh Allen doubles were interesting this week for a couple of reasons. Number one, I think Buffalo has disappointed people, and I think people were way too off of Diggs and just Buffalo in general. And I thought in this spot, I thought the highest upside on the slate and like single digit ownership across the board. And I thought people who did do Josh Allen doubles would mistakenly go to Beasley. And I think Beasley has eaten the last couple of weeks with Dawson Knox out, but with Knox coming back, I think that meaningfully changed the expectation and the role for Beasley. Similarly, the way that I thought that Gallup would for CeeDee, obviously got one of those right, one of those wrong. But in this instance, I went with a Josh Allen double stack with Diggs and Knox, both Diggs, Knox coming in at single digit ownership. Josh Allen was a little bit higher, but then I had Jonathan Taylor. And I did go with the D'Ernest and Mark Ingram chalk because I felt good.
I just think that's so fucking bad. I looked at it 100 times. I mean, you're talking about like 110% cumulative ownership on two spots.
But this is where cumulative ownership is not a great metric for like lineup duplication and overall.
No, I get cumulative ownership
is not a great metric. And I don't know why people do that. Because if you have two single digit ownership people, you are fully differentiated from the field. And if your main stack is coming in at single digit ownership, cumulative ownership doesn't matter. Where if you have a bunch of 20% owned guys who maybe your cumulative ownership is lower, but you're actually not having any leverage on the field in any significant way, it doesn't matter. Lineup leverage matters more than total ownership. And so,
yeah, but Ramondre over Ingram or D'Ernest gave you massive, massive leverage.
But in a single entry tournament where there's only a couple hundred play, like you have to look at lineup leverage and overall expectation. And I'm not going to give up 3 points of expectation when I already have a 5+ leverage score in this lineup. Like
What were the big leverage spots in this lineup? Who'd you have that was like under 10%?
Dawson Knox, Stephon Diggs were both single digit ownership. Okay. And then Josh Allen was 18. And then Jonathan Taylor was another pivot that I thought was going to be lower owned. And then my cheapie was MVS punt. So I had three guys at 6% ownership.
Like, okay, so MVS is the actual like leverage in this lineup.
No, that's not leverage. A cheap guy like that isn't leverage. When your stack is single digit, that's the leverage. That's where when Diggs goes off for 33 points, there's less than 5% of the people in the lineup or in the contest who have him. Like that's the leverage.
We might not be defining leverage in the
same. I just think Dearnest and Ingram together was such a pop, like, you know, like literally probably 30-40% of entries were like combining those guys together. Like, I just think it's,
yeah, I played zero lineups with those two in them.
Yeah. I just think it, and not because not only that, you're also losing, you know, we were talking about this being such a great running back week. You're also losing that leverage of like, because those guys were so popular, plays like Swift and JT and CMC, you know, those guys were way lower owned than they would be on a normal week. A normal week, Jonathan Taylor home against the Jags, like 35% ownership, and said he was down at like 20 because those guys were eating up so much. I get what you're saying, which is that you're giving up so many points because those guys were like, If you were to exclude one or both of those guys from optimals, you'd be giving up like 5 points, 6 points. Like you're giving up.
But you need to get it through your skull that like things don't happen in the median way all the time. In fact, a lot of the times they don't. So you need to like court that kind of volatility. You need to court some negative EV to have shots at first place. Like that's the whole thing.
Yeah. And I mean, I use different metrics to evaluate GPP lineups. I use, one of them is a Gini coefficient that I look at it's trying to score barbell ownership. So how many players do you have that are high owned and low owned? And it's okay to have barbell type ownership versus a bunch of guys at 20%.
No, I agree with you in theory.
Four single digit ownership and Diggs and the Diggs Knox Allen stack was one of the highest leverage spots on the day. And so overall cumulative ownership is one metric, but if that's the way that you build your GPP lineups in general, I think you're missing out on actual understanding of tournaments.
Nate, what we have here is we have the Jedi bell curve meme. And you're the guy in the middle right now. You're the guy in the middle being like, no, you don't understand. It's actually fine to do this. And then the Gini coefficient. And me and Sammy on the left are going, "Durr, don't play the two highest owned guys together." We are a living embodiment of the Jedi bell curve meme right now.
Well, I mean, we can get into this. I think GPPs are interesting because you can talk about this till you're blue in the face. And some people might say you have hard and fast rules. You never play this. And other people might say, well, it depends on your overall construction. If you have four single
digit, I'm not even saying hard and fast. I would never play the two most owned running backs. I would never play the two most chalk owned guys or whatever. I'm not saying that. I'm saying in this specific instance, I mean, I was expecting those guys to be combined on like 30% of rosters, which is just like, you can dead the field so fast if you eliminate, like if Mark Ingram had got 9 here, like you're deading so many people by not playing him. Dearnest, I thought was like unfadeable. I played him on all my teams, like, cause I just thought he was going to get so many touches, which he did. He didn't score and didn't get the bonus and got like 23. So
yeah, I just think if you're trying to leverage every single spot in your lineup
to leverage every single spot. I'm literally trying to just like paint by numbers, which is just don't play the two highest owned guys together.
I have four single digit ownership guys. Like that you're,
I'm not even saying your lineup was bad. I'm just saying as like the a priori, I'm not playing these two guys together.
Yeah, Nate, and I think I understand that, but
yeah. Yeah, you're this. It was fish.
It wasn't fish. I just don't think it was good, I guess.
It's fish.
I think if you go a Dak stack where all of your wide receivers are 25% owned, then you can't play those guys.
That's fair.
But if you have a leverage stack and you know that the
I probably would have wanted to go even more leverage with those two guys together, like Colts, like Jack Doyle and Michael Pittman with Wentz or something. Like I would have wanted to get real weird.
I like the MVS together. The MVS play was good.
Yeah, leverage on Adams.
Yeah.
Man, how fucking bad was that game? I mean,
it was brutal.
Like unwatchable. I was like, I need to go do more yard work. I don't want to be exposed to this. This is terrible.
It was real bad. It was really
bad. All right, Sammy.
Because MVS got a 41-yard catch like on the first drive of the game, and I'm like, this is gonna be it. I'm gonna get it from my min price. No.
No, the tough part about MVS is that he never actually gets there. I've wasted so many tournament dollars on MVS. I'm just like hoping to get even one day, but it'll never happen. Let's see. I played a Dax double. So I went Dak, Lamb, and Cooper and brought it back with Pitts. So obviously this took a lot.
Think that's a really low like I bet most people who did the Dak double did one of Lamb or Cooper and then one of Gallup or Schultz. I bet those two guys together was actually pretty low.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. It takes a lot of salary, right? With Pitts and those two guys and Dak. And then I also played, brought it back with Pitts. I also played Christian McCaffrey in this lineup. So I had a couple different iterations of this lineup. I played it with Jonathan Taylor elsewhere. And I did play Dearness for kind of the same reasons that you were talking about, Davis. I just thought Dearness was the best of the low price running backs. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had zero Ingram anywhere. I was just on team like Ingram's going to be bad chalk, and he wasn't. But I didn't play Ingram in this lineup. So with that, I needed some low price guys. I did not do.
Yeah. I'm very curious to see how this lineup finished out.
Yeah. James Washington.
You're feeling good.
Touchdown James right away. Oh, buddy. When Mason hit Washington for the first touchdown of the game, like I was just like, oh, I'm going to be so rich. Like this.
And JT
amazing.
Started off with like a 40 yard run right off.
Yeah,
the game.
Crushed.
It was all so great. And then the other low price guy I played was Tyler Johnson. So obviously with Godwin coming back in, I thought that it was a situation where obviously Johnson would have been a lot more chalky if Godwin didn't play. And I built this lineup before Godwin was in. I was kind of assuming he'd be out. And then when he was in, I was like, okay, well, you know what? The ownership's still going to be off of him. And this is still a really great spot against Washington. I'm going to keep it. I think the kid's got upside. He did not that great. Yeah, 3 for 17. That sucked. And then I finished it out. I actually paid up for defense, and I played the Steelers DST. At one
How
point,
how expensive were they?
They were 4.1.
Jesus Christ, dude! Yeah.
They were four. They were 4.1, my friend. And they
what
were one.
What is
point,
this?
They were
Sammy
1.
Says this is where I'm gonna get different. What?
Yeah.
I just don't understand GPPs the way you guys. I can't imagine playing some of those guys. Like,
well,
Sammy went Gallup.
You're a hand builder. This has to be a hand. Like,
I hand build my tournament teams, yeah, but I have projections and ownership up with them.
Yeah. Same. I don't build my own model and,
he doesn't have a Gini coefficient to give him the nuts.
Right, no Gini coefficients guiding my every decision.
Well, it's not like I optimize based on it's just.
Anyway, this lineup did put up 140 something. It min cashed.
Yeah, because CD. I mean, if you had CD and Dak, you're pretty much cashed.
And McCaffrey. I just thought McCaffrey was like.
What did he end up being owned? Because I didn't end up playing him. I played Jonathan Taylor instead. But
8.3.
And he could have absolutely dusted the slate because what Cam scores one rushing touchdown, throws another touchdown to like the 3 yard to Robbie Anderson. And I believe what he ended up like 5 yards short of the bonus in the end.
Yeah. Yeah. He had 95 rushing yards. He had no touchdowns. He had 10 receptions.
Yeah, he could have had 40 here pretty easy.
Yeah, I actually thought it was a tough call. That's why I played this lineup with JT elsewhere. It was a tough call who is better, but at the end of the day, you're getting Christian McCaffrey off the injury report at low ownership at a low price.
How tilted were you watching Ameer Abdullah score a rushing touchdown? Or not Ameer, Chuba Hubbard scores a rushing touchdown on a play that the Cardinals fucked up so bad. Chuba thought the play was dead when he was in the end zone. He was like, does this count? Am I scoring right now?
Yeah, didn't love it. Didn't love it.
Yeah.
The distribution of touches here was odd. Chuba and Abdullah combined outrushed McCaffrey, which is
bizarre. McCaffrey actually went to the tent once or twice.
Just once, but he did. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it was a little bit weird. Like, even though he wasn't technically on the injury report, he's still not bad. Like, his body is not right. So, and I also don't know if we're ever going to see like old school Christian McCaffrey, like 100% of the snap type thing again.
From him. He just keeps getting banged up.
Yeah. It's hard. I mean, nobody is able to handle that. We used to think Derrick Henry was the guy. I think NFL teams are actually just getting smarter about that, and we're going to have to adjust. Like, we're not going to get that old school usage that we used to get, but guys like Jonathan Taylor, I think, or Christian McCaffrey, I mean, those guys still have just immense upside. Anytime you can get those guys at single digit ownership, I think they're great plays. I went with Jonathan Taylor over CMC in almost all my teams, but I see the value there. I thought the other team, obviously it was because I was sweating it, but the Bills thing was so tilting because Josh Allen, I mean, should have had four touchdowns here. And I mean, they had what, four rushing touchdowns from
Matt Breida.
Freaking Matt Breida. I mean, it was like Breida actually looked good, which is RIP those Devin Singletary, Zach Moss seasonal teams. But
they both scored too, Nate.
I know, but I think Breida is going to actually be like, it's going to be a three headed backfield moving forward, I think.
Guys,
my highest scoring lineup was a Josh Allen double also with no bring back. And I used Sanders in that lineup, which hurt. But yeah, Josh Allen doubles or just Josh Allen lineups with Diggs were pretty nutty.
Yeah, Diggs is.
Guys, next week, the Chiefs and the Cowboys play.
So remember the Rams and Chiefs a couple years ago on Monday night where they put
that,
up like
that game totally came through. I like do kind of have a feeling this game might not come through. Like
I was going to ask, does it meet expectations? Mahomes coming off 405.
So I think that, so the first thing is that the Chiefs are going to get CH back.
Yeah. So they're a stone lock to score under 20.
And Dallas will probably just want to run a ton. You know, I mean, they started out the Falcons game running a ton. Like they, you know, Zeke had two rushing touchdowns. Dak has a rushing touchdown. And the prices are all really good though. Tyreek is 82, you know, instead of 9,000. CeeDee is 76. Amari is 6.2. Gallup is 4.2. Kelsey is 7.1. But yeah, and Dak is only priced at 7,200. I think he'll probably be the cash game quarterback again next week.
Yeah.
I wish it was in the dome, you know?
AJ Dillon, 6.2 could be.
He'll be hippopotamus.
Yeah. Let's see who else here is interesting at running back. Oh, this is actually pretty interesting. So Donta Foreman led the Titans in rushing and actually had three targets in the passing game, but the Titans played the Houston Texans at home.
Mother of God.
Yeah.
How much is Foreman? Cause I mean, they're definitely splitting work. I think Peterson got what 10 carries.
I mean, all
and
three
so did McNichols.
Yeah. All I three mean, of the running backs played
any of those guys.
Oh, I'll probably play Foreman in tournaments.
No, Foreman. I mean, it was literally a three headed. I mean, yeah, Adrian Peterson and Jermaine McNichols combined for 12 rushing attempts with like four targets. You can't play a guy who's missing out on that.
Davis, aren't you worried about them taking the shackles off Adrian Peterson now that he's back in shape and finally?
See, I think it's going to go the other way. I think as long as Foreman continues to play better, like I think Peterson will just dust off. I mean, maybe I'll
be
wrong.
If anything, I'm more worried about McNichols. Like if McNichols wasn't there, then I would say Foreman is very
well. McNichols went from a 54% snap share back to a 30% snap share, like back to basically what he was doing with Henry.
Yeah, I don't know, McNichols' talent. I think he's
Miles Gaskin, $5,700 against the New York Jets. Dude, he's getting all the touches for them. All of them. They are not doing the Savon Ahmed thing, really. McCaffrey's up to 8,900. DeAndre Swift is only 7,000 against the Cleveland Browns. Lock.
If Williams is out again, it's a lock.
Yeah. Oh, buddy.
We got Eli Mitchell at 5,800 against Jacksonville. I guess we'll learn more about not what they plan on doing with Jeff Wilson Jr. tonight. I mean, Eli, they just keeps getting all the touches, dude. He just keeps getting all the touches.
I'm not. You can't trust that backfield. I mean, one week it's this, one week it's that.
That is not true. What you are saying is straight up not true. Eli Mitchell has been the dude every game he's been healthy.
Yeah. Yeah. They like Eli, bro. Like Eli's a play.
Yeah. What you are saying is like bad fantasy football tout analysis. Like it's not all the rushing.
Hasty literally has matched him in target share for like,
well, he's got a high ankle sprain again.
Yeah. Hasty is dusty, bro.
Yeah. Hasty's out.
Oh,
It doesn't mean he's going to be out next week, but he's already out for this game. So we got to, I mean, Jeff Wilson Jr. was active in the last game and did not record a snap. It was just all Eli against the Cardinals.
Yeah. In week 9, Hasty had 4 targets. In week 8, Mitchell didn't get a target so if Hasty is out, obviously that would change things.
Well, the thesis behind the play is that they're playing Jacksonville and Eli's going to get 18 carries and 100 yards again. He's Damian Harris.
Except he got 5 catches last week.
Well, that was the, yeah.
That was when
I know Hasty was in and out and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It will be interesting. I think CEH probably is back.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see how he projects because Daryl has just been fucking cucking him.
Yeah, dude. I mean, Daryl Randy Moss like yesterday, 100 receiving yards, like had the Moss in the end zone. Daryl is 5.4 and CEH is 5.2. I think that's really interesting.
Wait, who's 4.2?
CEH is 5.2.
No, yeah. Sammy, don't. You can't play. CEH would be.
I mean,
I don't know, dude.
I'm not doing it, dude.
Certainly not a cash play. Certainly not a cash play. Like, not
Darrell
even.
Darrell looks so much. Like, there's no way they're not going to continue to go to Darrell. Like,
Darrell is so good. He's so much better.
I mean, he's not dynamic at all. Like, he doesn't gain any extra yards or anything, but he is, Darrell is the classic. You need three yards. He got you 3. You need 5 yards. He got you 3.
He just like doesn't screw anything up. They throw on the ball and he catches it. It's amazing. Yeah. Yeah.
And CEH literally is just consistent underperforming. Like,
yeah, he just always fucks it up.
Yeah.
God. So if Kyler is back next week, James Conner is 6,100 and all the Cardinals are free. Hopkins is 6,500. Kirk is 5,700. AJ Green is 46. Rondell's 4.2. I guess Ertz is priced up. I mean, priced up. He's 4.8, but that is a pretty interesting spot because Seattle's defense is terrible.
It's just spread so far. Like you have no idea what to do with those touches because
I mean, you just got
Hopkins is just not more than like Hopkins. Is
well, you
not
just
got to
hit the guy who scores 2 touchdowns because I mean, a bunch of them have done that this year, right? Kirk's had a big game. AJ Green's had a big game. Hopkins has had 2 touchdown games. I think Rondell had the game against the Vikings.
I think Kirk turns into the chalk. We'll see if Hopkins can play. Cause he was like, apparently the furthest away from playing this week.
Yeah.
Yeah. If he doesn't go next week and Kyler's back in, I think Kirk is just like, yeah, at 5.7 going to be kind of a cash lock.
Yeah. All right. That should wrap it up for us here. We'll be back next week. I mean, hopefully we'll be able to generate some good content for you guys. You know, we're doing the best we can in the constraints that we're given.
I make Albrain again for you guys sending me invites just to keep it fresh. You know,
it's just not been a good year for the show. Like there really has not been that much tilt. Now that Mike Davis is getting out snapped and out carried by Wayne Gallman, it's like that bit's dead. We can't, like, Nate's not even ever gonna play Mike Davis again.
So tough.
Too much winning. It's just a bummer. Luckily, yeah. Sammy, I don't know what got into you, but hopefully that could happen next week too.
Yeah. All right, everyone. We're wrapping it up. We'll be back next week.